Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'm excited about having Joan Pride back on the show. Of course, not as excited as she is about being back on the show. I mean, it's got to be like a dream come true for her to be on this show. Right, Joan?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
A veritable dream come true, right?
Or a nightmare, depending on how you look at it.
Well, it's a dream. Either way, it's a dream.
Yeah. Right? What if you say so, Jim.
You're
okay.
Always parsing my
Whatever.
Words, Joan. You're
Whatever.
Always parsing. Welcome back.
Thank you, Jim. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Joan, let's hit the letter and talk about the lead, and it's all about Mr. Bush and Mr. Dean, but mostly about Mr. Dean. What's up with this?
That's right. Well, and one disclaimer I have to make is to remind your listeners that this letter, the date of the letter was last Friday. Mm-hmm. Most people didn't hit their mailboxes till Monday or Tuesday, but the worst nightmare of a journalist, major news is made over the weekend after this goes to bed and after it's possible for us to pull it back.
Yeah.
And, of course, I'm referring to Saddam Hussein getting captured. So,
well, of course, you this happened, what you just described happened to every newspaper and a lot of magazines, and most magazines in the country or in the world,
right.
Maybe. Because
exactly.
It happened like overnight or something. You know, when
it happened, I guess... Well, it was announced in the United States on Sunday morning, that was several hours after he had been captured. But it was, for any Newsweekly like Newsweek or Businessweek or anything like that, or for us, and plus for any daily newspaper that comes out in the morning, it was too late for any of us to get that into our publication. So you just sort of have to take everything we're saying here with a grain of salt.
So are you saying, Joan, are you saying that the capture of Saddam Hussein, now basically what you did, let's explain what you said on Friday. You said that Dean is the odds-on favorite for the nomination on the Democrat side. Are you saying that had you known about Saddam being captured that you would not have said that?
Well, I don't know because I didn't report the story, but I have to wonder, given the fact that I think Mr. Dean has been pretty outspoken in his anti-war policies. Now, come on, work with me. Don't be sarcastic. You asked me what I thought, and I'm telling you.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
One of the problems here is, of course, there's this feeding frenzy of the other Democratic candidates jumping on him for these remarks. And in light of Saddam's capture, I think there's more ability to criticize him. So, you know, we say, well, I don't want to give away what we say toward the bottom of the page, but I do think it kind of colors. I still think he's going to be the nominee, but I don't know that it's necessarily going to be as easy from here on in.
Yeah. Well, the thing, I think you're right, and I don't think that barring another revelation, some other issue, That could possibly happen. I don't think that what happened over the weekend is going to change Mr. Dean's the outcome of the Democrat nomination. I still think you're right. I still think Dean is going to be the nominee for the Democrats. But what it's going to change, especially Joan, if the capture of Saddam Hussein settles things down in Iraq and there starts to be some success over there, it will clearly change his rhetoric, and it'll clearly change the focus of his campaign. And of course, if things start really improving a lot in the next 2 months, it actually could change what we just predicted. You know, because you got Lieberman, you got Mr. Gephardt, who's got a pretty good war record, hasn't he?
Yeah, I would say so. I think one of the problems.
He voted for the war, and he voted for the money to fund it.
Okay, I'm going to jump in here. The one of the problems here is, though, I think Dean has developed such a big grassroots following that's going to be hard to counteract.
Yeah, and the only thing I agree with you. The only thing that could happen would be if there was, you know, some kind of a big turnaround. because hasn't Mr. Dean already made, hasn't he already kind of put, drawn his line in the sand with regard to the war? I mean, isn't there kind of a no going back situation with him, where he could backpedal on the war?
Yes. Oh, I agree. Yes.
And so that's all I was getting at with Mr. Gephardt, is he has been, you know, true to his colors with regard to the Democratic Party, but he's also been kind of a, you know, I think he would consider himself to be a leader and somebody who was kind of putting America first with regard to his vote for the war, in voting for going to war, and his vote for the $87 billion or whatever. So that's a turn of events that could actually benefit him in Iowa, couldn't it?
Well, I suppose it could. I just don't believe he's ever been capable of winning the nomination. I don't.
I don't disagree with you, but yeah. I mean, who else is there?
Well, that's the other problem. Who else is there?
Yeah.
Unless you're talking about Senator Clinton. Are you talking about Senator Clinton?
No. I really am not, because, I mean, I really think she's – I think we're looking at 2008. I don't think there's any question. I mean, it's think about this, Joan. If something happened to derail Mr. Bush, then they've got candidates that can go up against him in 2004. And if nothing happens to derail Mr. Bush's the train he's riding on right now, then, you know, I don't think that, you know, anybody's going to beat him.
Yeah.
So, no, I'm having a hard time imagining the scenario that would get Senator Clinton in the race this year, this election, aren't you?
Well, I've always had trouble imagining the scenario where Bush does not win. The only thing I can come up with is some very unexpected collapse of the economy, which I can't imagine is going to happen.
That's not going to happen without some kind of an attack. And Joan, we've already been attacked, and the economy didn't completely collapse. And,
right.
And so I think you're right. But I do think, and this is something that we're going to get into, and I think in probably the next segment, I do think that there are some scenarios, there are some things that could happen that could hurt him with regard to the war on terror, with regard to, you know, the some events in Iraq and some events in Afghanistan.
That's right. That's a very good point.
So, all right. Well, what we're going to do, folks, when we come back, we're going to talk about. I'm going to get Joan to tell us a little bit about the layout of the primaries for the Democrats and how that could play out. You know, we're going to blend in the news with this and modify this what Kipling had to say a little bit based on the news, based on the Saddam Hussein being captured, and we're going to get her to lay it out for us with regard to Iowa and New Hampshire and what that's going to mean to some of the marginal players and the Democrat side. That's coming up right after these messages. 20 after. Stay with us. All right. What do you think, Joan?
It's old.
It's not that old. Come on, give me a break. That's pretty new stuff there.
Well, for you, yeah. It's brand new compared to what you usually play.
Joan keeps trying to brand me as a fossil, ladies and gentlemen. It's just not working.
I don't
Joan.
Need to brand you.
It's coming across as
stated
shrill.
Fact.
Joan is coming across as shrill. It's just not. It's not. A,
I've
it's
always
not,
been shrill.
It's not a good
she
look
shrieked.
On you, Joan. tell us about the primaries. What's coming up first and second and third? And,
well, there's kind of an easy way to sum all this up. If you blink, you'll miss them, basically. I'm sure there are very good reasons for doing this, but I've never understood why they wanted to kind of smash everything together. But, for example, on February 3rd, you're going to have seven states having their primaries. They're going to be choosing 335 delegates, which is quite a big chunk.
Yeah.
And we're saying that by early March, Dean will pretty much have the nomination sewed up.
February 3rd is going to get, what is that going to get? What are those states? Is that the super primary day?
Oh, Super Tuesday?
Is that a Super Tuesday?
There used to be Super Tuesday, but now we've got many Super Tuesdays.
Yeah. So there are seven states on February 3rd?
Right.
And that's, is that Iowa? And what else? New Hampshire? Are they the same days?
Well, Iowa's the caucuses.
Oh, yeah.
See, the Iowa caucuses come first.
Yeah, they're in January.
And right. And then the New Hampshire primary follows soon after. And then this big seven-state deal comes shortly after that.
Okay, so New Hampshire, I knew that Iowa and New Hampshire were early, but neither one of them are part of the first Super Tuesday. So probably whoever, by the time we get through the Iowa caucuses and the New Hampshire primary, probably in January, I guess it is, then we should know, we'll have a pretty good, so in about 30 days or so, a little more than 30 days, we'll have a pretty good idea of who's in and who's out, won't we?
Yeah, it's amazing. And now, I, to be fair, I can kind of see why they wanted to do this, because if they have intra-party squabbles all the way through till April or May, and the president is sitting in the White House above the fray and being presidential, that doesn't do the Democrats any good.
Right.
But, given that the Democratic infrastructure isn't real thrilled with Dr. Dean, this isn't really the scenario they had expected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course something else happened, Joan, in the last week or so. That's and maybe I can't remember. I think maybe about the time we were together last time, Mr. Dean got a little bit of a lever, didn't he?
Got a little bit of a lever.
He got a leg up, didn't he? From one of his from a pretty visible guy, didn't he? Get Mr. Gore.
Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot
work
all about
here,
that.
Joan.
I'm
work
sorry.
With me here.
I'm
yeah,
sorry.
You let
no,
Saddam.
I'm...
You let Saddam over a blow you out there. No,
but so what? So what? The Gore endorsed him.
No,
well,
this
who cares?
This wasn't a so what, Joan. This was
yeah.
a big. You don't think this was a big deal that Gore endorsed him?
Well, I don't know. I mean, does this mean that he's got the Democrat Party's blessing? Or does he just has Gore's blessing?
Well, it does mean he has a Democrat. He does not mean he has the Democrat Party's blessing. It does mean it's just Gore's blessing. But I think it's an attempt. And I've been reading some things about this that I agree with. And I think it's an attempt by Mr. Gore to change the direction of the Democratic Party from the Clinton, what's the guy's name, the big fundraiser, the president of the...
McAuliffe,
yeah, Terry McAuliffe. From the Clinton-McAuliffe juggernaut, it's Mr. Gore's attempt, along with Mr. Dean, to sort of wrest control from those guys.
Oh, I agree, except that those guys are the ones who do have the control, because McAuliffe is the head of the party right now.
Right.
And, well, not the head of the, you know what I mean, he's the chief financier, and Clinton is the head of the party. I don't know how a Gore endorsement accomplishes that, since you have Clinton people in all the important spots.
But Clintons aren't big Dean fans. And so if Mr. Gore's influence can give Mr. Dean more credibility and more strength, then what we have here is an opportunity maybe for Mr. Gore to become a big player in the Democrat Party. What about that idea?
And you said the Clintons are not big Dean.
They're
fans.
Not. They're
yeah, but that's what I'm saying. If all the party operatives are people that the Clintons have put in place, I don't know how. I mean, from some kind of coup, how Dean and Gore, wrest control from.
It's a kind of a coup. I think it's the kind of thing that we could be looking at. And I'm not saying that it's a slam dunk. I'm not saying it's not risky. But think about this, Joan. What do either one of those guys have to lose? I mean, Dean's up against Mr. Bush, for God's sake, and Gore is basically a marginal player. What have they got to lose? I mean, they actually, to me, it makes perfect political sense for these guys to band together.
They could try. I find Gore to be very irrelevant now.
Well, I'll tell you, Joan, let's take a page. They probably took a page from Mr. Clinton. If you're willing to be that outrageous, you can get away with stuff.
Well, maybe, but I also think, and I'm not one of these people, but I think there's a lot of Democrats out there who still like Bill Clinton and still miss him.
The bottom line on the page one, Joan, is that Kiplinger says that Dean will be the Democrat nominee.
Yes.
And has anything happened in the last 10 days that changes that?
Oh, absolutely not. I also, another quick thing I'd like to point out is that we are suggesting that he might tap General Clark as his running mate, which I think is interesting.
And you also point out that if Mr. Dean falters, that Clark is the heir apparent, not Gephardt or Kerry or...
Clark is more likely than Gephardt.
How about that?
Yeah.
That's kind of breaking news there, folks. Stand by.
So.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. It's 29 After. The show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
I can't imagine any... fire small business.
We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need, but there's the challenge.
He's Jim Blasingay, the small business advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thanks for hanging around with us today. 800-531-3815, toll-free, coast-to-coast. We're visiting with Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And, Joan, this is rich. This next headline is rich to me. Top of page two.
Yes, sir.
Unions will push for more say in important company decisions. Now, let me see if I get this straight here.
Yeah.
We're down over 20 years from like 20-something percent of the workforce. Of the non-government workforce being union to like 12%. Manufacturing jobs are leaving the United States like rats leaving a ship, almost a sinking ship, and not all because of globalization, to a lot, some degree because of some excessive trade labor negotiations, and unions are demanding more involvement in company decisions. What's wrong with that picture,
well,
Joan?
I now notice we never said they would get the say. They're just
right.
Trying to get the say.
And you would be exactly right if you didn't say that they were going to get it. I mean, what are these? Like I said before about that country song. I know what they're thinking, I know what they're feeling. But what are they thinking?
I don't know. Well, and you know, the only real strength of the unions that I can see now is in the public sector.
Yeah.
I think state and local unions are fairly strong, but. As you point out, the traditional strength of unions was in manufacturing, and that's gone. And the attempts to organize, I guess I would call it the high tech sector, really haven't worked out.
Well, and to be fair, one of the things that they're talking about doing is maybe being a little bit more involved in the decisions which involve keeping the jobs here, and also hopefully. Laying everybody's cards on the table and see what we can afford and what it would take to keep those jobs here.
Right, but that also means concessions on the part
right.
of the union. So
well, on everybody's part, really.
Right,
if you lay your cards on the table.
But it's not like they could do maybe 30 years ago and just throw their weight around and say we want this and then get it because of their strength.
Or walk out.
You right,
know, it's our way or the highway. And boy, there was a lot of period of time. There was a period of time when that worked, but.
Right.
Thank goodness it doesn't work anymore. Joan, let's move on down and talk about another thing. This is an interesting little wrinkle here that I hadn't thought about. Language and cultural barriers are raising our health care costs. What's that about?
I hadn't thought about this myself, but this is interesting. If you think about it, if you have minority workers for whom English is their second language, they may not be aware or understanding of the things they need to do for preventative measures, and we've talked about this before, that any bit of prevention that you can add into your health insurance program really reaps benefits.
Well, and you also throw in the word cultural here, meaning that perhaps people who are you know, who weren't born in this country, who are working here now, they've immigrated here and are working now. Some of the cultural attitudes about medicine and remedies and taking, you know. Getting health care, there might need to be some upgrading. There may be a certain level of ignorance that they just have and I don't mean, you know, ignorance in a derogatory way. Just they just don't know about certain things that are available because it hasn't been part of their culture in the past.
Right, and you know, the United States has gone through that too. Think about
exactly.
How mental health issues have changed over the last 20 or 30 years.
Absolutely.
You know, 30 years ago, if you were seeing a psychiatrist, that was considered, you know, a blot on your character
right.
or your resume. And
right.
now it's just something that you need to do to get healthy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so these are things to pay attention to, folks. If you have people working for you, regardless of where they're from or whatever, you know, make sure that they have the education, that they have exposure to all the things that are available to them to be healthy, to stay healthy, not just to get health care when they're sick or when they're hurt, but to live a healthy lifestyle. And Joan, that's what we're going to have to do in the future. That's one of the best things we can do to long-term lower our overall health care costs is to live healthy, isn't it?
Avoid getting sick in the first place.
Yeah. You guys have a in the HR department, Joan. One more quick thing before we take a break. Talk to us about this this little program that you guys have at Kiplinger. The Retire and Thrive. What's that about?
Right. Well, the question I guess you'd be asking yourself if you were going to retire. I know you're never going to retire, but
never.
If you were going to, you'd be asking yourself what to do with your life. And we have a publication called Retire and Thrive, and we think it would be very helpful for people who are leaving the full-time workforce who sort of need direction in their new life.
And it's $9 and plus shipping. That's a good price, folks. You can get it at this website, kiplinger.com/links/retire. And when we come back, I'll get Joan to give us a phone number you can call and get that book too, because I think that might help a lot of folks. $9 is called Retire and Thrive. 20 Till, stay with us. We'll be right back.
When you're down.
We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, and when I'm down in trouble, I call my friend Joan Pride. You know, even though it probably doesn't seem like it all the time, Joan really is a good friend. But Joan, we won't let that. We'll let that be our little secret, right?
Don't tell anybody else.
I wouldn't want that to get out or anything. It'd ruin your image. Joan.
Jim, you got your listeners just desperately waiting for this 800.
Oh yeah,
number.
That's right. We got to give the folks. This is for the Retire and Thrive booklet that I recommend to you, especially if you're in that. If you'd like to retire or thrive, or both of those, either one, here's a phone number you can call. Go ahead, Joan.
It's a toll-free number. It's 800-280-7165. And remember to ask for Operator 2 when you call.
We have to remember that. Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. And, Joan, listen, while we're at it, I want to encourage you to go to the website of Kiplinger, kiplinger.com. And I bet if you noodle around enough, even if you forget those suffixes that I gave you for that that booklet, you can find it there at kiplinger.com, plus a bunch of other good stuff, a lot of stuff that's free. And you can find out more about their publications, the Kiplinger Letter, which is in its 81st year. Is that right? 81st
year?
That's weekly. That's the weekly flagship. And then they got the three biweekly letters, of California, the Tax, and the Agriculture Letter. And then they got a magazine, too, right, Joan?
That's right. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
But we got to call a different phone number. We can subscribe on the website, but we got to call another phone number, yet another one, right, Joan, if they want to subscribe?
Exactly. And this one is also toll-free. It's 800-544-0155.
And that'd be a good Christmas present for yourself, folks, or for someone that you love. To subscribe to especially the Kiplinger Letter. That's my favorite. Joan, let's talk about trade. You know, Mr. Bush recently ended the steel tariffs, which was a smart thing for him to do, fixing a really dumb thing that he did when he put them in place about
right.
3 years ago. So, but he did that under the threat of some retaliatory tariffs by our trading partners. And Kiplinger says that Europe, even regardless of what they've done on the steel tariffs, Europe is not through trying to influence us with trade, aren't they?
Right. And the number one thing, at least, that we've been following here has to do with an export tax subsidy, a tax subsidy for U.S. exporters. Now, the EU was so upset about this that they went to the World Trade Organization and got a ruling against this. And they now have the authority under the WTO to retaliate, to slap tariffs on our goods. And they're getting ready to do it because Congress failed to repeal this export subsidy before it went home for the holidays.
So the steel tariff wasn't enough. They want this off. And basically, if I understand
they want it all.
And basically, if I understand this, Joan, this is a tax concession that U.S. companies get in the U.S. to help offset tariffs that the other countries put on their on goods being imported. Is that right?
That's right. That's absolutely right.
So basically, they're trying to set the government U.S. policy over there. Is that right? I mean this is so totally out of character for the Europeans, right, to be so presumptuous.
Hard as it may be to believe.
It's hard to believe.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right.
So, but the good news is you're expecting a Canadian softwood lumber deal. Now, why is this important?
Well, what we're looking at here is that the U.S. and Canada have agreed to eliminate a 28% tariff that the U.S. now imposes on Canadian softwood lumber.
Like fir and pine used in construction.
Right. And now we do say that the impact on lumber prices won't be really high because the market is driven mainly by demand for new homes in the U.S., but I still think it's got to be a good development.
Joan, let's move over and talk about something that you're just one of our experts on, and that's that's currency. Why is the dollar still dropping?
Well, because I think everybody suspects that the U.S. officials want it to drop, but we're saying that our economy is beginning to hum along here. You would think that the dollar would perk up, but there are, as you point out, several reasons, and one of them that worries me, of course, is rising budget deficits in the United States.
That's the biggie, isn't it?
That really is. I mean, we do talk here about interest rate disparities, that, you know, the gap between the U.S. and other nations have widened, so that, if you want a good return on your money, you're not getting it here. But I still think that the budget deficit is the number one problem that
it's important, Joan, that we identify that there are two kinds of budget deficits. There are temporary, momentary kind of budget deficits that happen, like when you go to war, and then there are structural deficits that are based on the revenue structure.
And we got both.
And so that's kind of, and when you throw that in with the fact that people, that some of the foreign investors are worried about a future a terrorist attack, you know, Joan, 2004 could be a pretty momentous year for the terrorists who don't like Mr. Bush. And so I think that's something we need to keep our heads up for. And you throw all that together, and it's kind of a perfect storm for keeping the dollar lower, isn't it?
Oh, well, exactly. And then, of course, what we add in here is that U.S. officials have not been, quote-unquote, talking the dollar up. Mm-hmm. They've been actually talking it down. They want a weaker dollar because it helps our exports.
That's the equal and opposite reaction that we like, because
right.
it helps our manufacturing. One of the things that Mr. Bush needs, Joan, he needs the job situation to turn around. Of course, if jobs are turning around, we're hiring more people, and we're getting, into a point where we're close to maybe 5% or lower unemployment, then that also means the economy is doing better. So that's kind of a double benefit there.
Right.
And we need to be able to say, he needs to be able to say that manufacturing is, coming back to the United States. And so all, none of that happens if the dollar gets too strong.
That's right.
So this is a very interesting time, folks. And I know currency issues are complicated, but this is an interesting one and not all that difficult to follow. I mean, my God, if Joan and I can understand it, anybody can understand it. Right, Joan?
Right. Absolutely.
Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to check it out when you get a chance. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. Joan, let's move down to something that I know you're an expert at, and that's this Medicare law. You've been following that a little bit, and what's some of the news there?
Well, the big thing about the Medicare law was the prescription drug benefit, but there was this little provision tucked in there that's really going to be important, we think, and it's called health savings accounts. But in addition to that, there were other things tucked in there that I don't think got a lot of play, and one was this idea that employees can use debit cards, that the employer can use give them a debit card to pay for expenses out of their cafeteria plan, their flexible spending account that they've been keeping money in, and which really helps with paperwork and a lot of other problems. And there were some administrative hurdles that had to be overcome that were taken care of in this bill.
How would that debit card be used? What would be an application it would be used for?
Well, you could use it at the doctor's office if you were going to pay for something that wasn't covered under your health insurance
right.
plan.
Hmm. And that debit card would come out of their benefits, or would it come out of their pay?
Well, it would come out of technically it would come out of pay, because you've already put the money into your flexible spending plan out of it, your payroll deduction, and
well,
it comes off the top of your income too.
It's just these are just little trimming out of getting the healthcare system and the tax laws focused more on 21st century reality and away from the 20th century.
Which is that individuals need to take more responsibility for their own health care finances.
And portability. I mean, these are all things, and Joan, you and I have been predicting this for two or 3 years. We've been saying this needed to be done. And these are, even though this Medicare bill was expensive, even though a lot of people on both sides of the aisle don't like it, and probably both for good reasons, but there are some trends. There are, and especially this health savings account, some of the adjustments that were made there that really are momentous. I think we'll look back, Joan, 20 years from now and say that this health savings account component of the Medicare bill was a landmark improvement.
I think so.
And because, see, that not only gave new life to the medical savings accounts, it actually allows employers to contribute to what we used to call medical savings accounts.
That's right. And again, that was one of the flaws of the old MSAs, which that you couldn't do that.
So this is all good news, folks, for getting our tax code focused more on the way we need to be providing these kinds of benefits for our employees in the 21st century, rather than still trying to fix and use baling wire and tape to fix up the old 20th century program.
Right.
Joan, let's move on over and talk about retail sales. You guys are pointing out that we're still pretty much on track for a good holiday season.
Right. I think you probably have seen some recent news reports saying that things weren't as rosy as retailers had hoped because of some weather problems and whatnot. But we think that there's still going to be a 6% gain over last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would be pretty good news if that were to occur.
And the interesting thing is that it seems that the bigger ticket items are doing well, but maybe clothes not so much.
Isn't that funny? Yeah, the electronics and the computers, even home furnishings.
I thought you were going to take you could take care of that yourself personally.
Well,
the clothes thing.
We've been buying the electronics. We're working on that.
I thought the economy basically counted on Joan Pride to hold up the clothes end of things.
Well, I can only buy so many clothes,
oh,
you know.
Okay. Well, I thought you were our go-to person. What about
working on it.
What about the airlines? Just, you know, speaking of the economy, how are they doing these days?
Well, we say that they're going to be perking up next year, but that they're still going to have deficit problems at least for another year, at least through 2004. And I hate to tell you, but there's going to be more cost cutting, more downsizing. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to be getting those peanuts that you used to love on the plane, that kind of thing.
We don't get peanuts anymore for some reason. But the thing is, Joan, the reports are that business travelers are back, and that's where the airlines make their money, isn't it, on business travelers?
Yeah, they don't make as much money on those super saver coach tourist people.
Right, absolutely. Hey, Joan, thanks for being here. Good job.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you.
Enjoyed it as always. And you're going to be here on Christmas morning with me, aren't you?
It's going to be a lot of fun.
She's hardcore dedicated, folks.
You bet.
She loves being with me. You just can't get enough of it, can you, Joan?
Oh, that's it. That's exactly
it. Hello?
Right.
Thanks, Joan.
Thank you.
Christmas morning.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest entrepreneurial country in the world. And remember, when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.